Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
He talks about getting an x-ray, like for his teeth. And it's like, okay, it's going to be all right. We're just going to go behind this door. Yeah. And he's just there with his gun. Like, oh! I do want to just apologize slightly to the sirens for new episodes of Pop Kitchen not being every single Wednesday. I feel like I'm a liar, charlatan, a fraud.
I'd say 3 out of 4 Wednesdays.
three out of 4 Wednesdays is a good hit rate.
A couple of Thursdays.
I can't start saying it's not because I need to sort of always aim for the Wednesday, but I am very sorry. I was away with limited Wi-Fi. Amazing trip. And before I sort of complain about the shenanigans of my trip, I obviously just want to say, huge blessing.
Yes, you
travel is amazing. I was in
all over. Tell us where you went,
James. I went to Rwanda, Zambia, and Kenya.
And it was for work.
For work. Look, incredible. Like, as always, travel broadens the mind. It's winter sun.
Yes.
I saw incredible things. You see new people, new places, new countries. I can't sort of say how great travel is.
Meanwhile, my life was in black and white. And James is out in, like, you know.
I was like driving through Kenyan countryside thinking how grateful I was. I saw like Masai Mara warriors dancing, like all this stuff. I met genuine privilege. I was staying in like gorgeous lodges that were well beyond anything I could ever afford, filming lions and elephants and giraffes. That being said.
Oh, something happened.
It was like, well, it's just like, it's so many things. It's like a 9-day trip.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously, like, traveling for work with equipment is very different to like traveling for holiday. And so we're doing like these 15 plus hour work days with travel, either a flight in the morning or a flight in the evening, car drives, customs. And I was properly like a broken man halfway through on 4 to 5 hours sleep multiple days in a row. And I was genuinely like, I can't edit tonight. I have 4 hours to sleep. I need to just get on with myself. So like in a lot of the countries I went to, we wanted to do drone stuff, but there are like obviously drone laws in most countries. In these countries, drones are just straight up illegal.
Right.
And that's rightfully so because poachers use them to hunt for animals and all these kinds of things. So they're very suspicious of drones. You cannot get in without the right permits. And even though we got loads of permits, the sort of customs immigration approach is like, oh, you have the right form. Cool. That doesn't necessarily mean we're just going to let you in. Queue, hour-long interrogation, queue. I had one woman who wanted to go through the serial numbers of every piece of lens, monitor, equipment before I could be let back into the country. Leave it. Like, so here's the other thing. Like, Kigali in Rwanda was really different. It's like super modern.
Yeah.
You know, there's like everything's very paved and there's loads of like modern hotels and bars and it feels like a completely different to like Nairobi or Lusaka.
Right.
I'm in Rwanda. I'm like, oh my God, this is like really developed. It almost feels like a Miami in some sense. It's like palm trees lined in the roads. Yeah. But the airport experience was like going back in time.
Right.
There wasn't even a shop to buy like water and a Snickers. Like just nothing. And we ended up, we're flying back into Kenya from Kigali,
right.
And we have this visa for Kenya called an ETA. And we didn't know that it's only one use valid for 90 days.
Oh,
and it didn't say anywhere on the form that like once you've used it, that's it, you need to apply for another one. So you've got this 6:30 p.m. flight. And I meant to like get into the hotel in Nairobi at like 9:30, 10.
And you're with people still this day.
I'm just with my producer, my director. And we get to this desk and they're like, your UTA's been used, like you can't fly. And we like need to get to Nairobi the next day because we have a 5.5 hour drive to the Masai Mara. It's like, we have to get there. And we're like, what do we do? Like, you have to apply for the ETA. So we have to apply for a new one, which is like an automated system. You don't know when you're going to get it back. Anyway, the next flight we could get was at 3:40 a.m. Okay. So we had to basically drive back to our hotel, beg them to give us our hotel rooms back, get 90 minutes of sleep, go back to the airport, get on that flight, arrive at like 5:30 in the morning, 6:30 in Nairobi. But anyway, trying to get on this plane, George, was like, look, I'm sure these people are working very hard, but when I came to this desk, bear in mind, it's like 1:30 in the morning.
Any airport in the world, that's a bad time.
it's like the people working there, every time someone in the queue came around, it's like their memories were wiped and they'd never seen a passport, a visa, yeah. a suitcase. Like the concept of like boarding a plane was like brand new. And there were a couple of times I felt like I was like, please, I was like running away. Like, let me just take this. I was like, they looked at my belly case that's meant to go on the overhead. Like, that can't go in. I'm like, yes, it can. It's the right size. It's this. What's in it? Camera equipment. Oh, I need to see all of it. This and that. Going through security felt like a heist. At the gate, all this stuff is like flagging up when I do my passport, and like four people staring at a computer being like, you can't fly. No, not this guy. But nobody knows what's going on. And a plane took off like 40 minutes early, and then the guy comes on with a high-vis and starts pointing at my seat being like, he can't fly. And I was just a broken man. And then I did a whole 15-hour day after that, having flown and traveled.
Wow.
Through the night. And it's not like going to Spain traveling. It's like customs.
It's far away.
Kit.
The different rules.
Just different rules. I was broken. Wow. There are photos of me somewhere, like in the middle of the day in lunch, with my head just collapsed
on the table. Like, aren't you someone who can just fall asleep anywhere? Like, don't you have that like special?
I fall asleep anywhere, but I do need to fall asleep somewhere.
Oh yeah.
I can't just after like 3 hours sleep and like add filming on the equator, okay. 35 degrees.
Yeah.
Ads,
oh God, yeah.
Just like running around, it's filming for hotels, like running around different hotels, multiple shots
so
a day.
So you're tired, you're exhausted.
Exhausted.
You had a bad travel experience. So, you know what, I think I was all right in London, actually.
I'm also taking Malarone, which is like a malaria pill, which is known to kind of like knock you out a bit.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if that, I could have just been tired, but.
Maybe the airport experience was actually amazing, but your Malarone was just like.
But like, for the last half, I was properly exhausted, but also, I was in the Masai Mara and I had no sleep, but I'm in the middle of the night, it's pitch black,
yeah.
and I can see the entire Milky Way scorched across the sky. And this like Masai Mara warrior is like escorting me to my lodge, and like a hyena runs past us. I do just have to pinch myself and be like, that also was amazing, but I'm deliriously tired. There was a place I stayed where my bathroom was so big, it had two bathrooms. It was like a bathroom that had like a shower bathroom and then a toilet bathroom with an indoor-outdoor shower and then like a reflection chair in the corner of the bathroom for just sitting. And
amazing.
It was great.
I have no such anecdotes to compete with that. That's amazing. Yeah, that's I did see your photos. I was like, well, I'll be having an amazing time. Yeah.
I did tell them, like, you know, I would have done this for free. Like taking videos of lions or lions hunting a buffalo.
And you saw lions and elephants. Did you see any, the big five?
I didn't see rhino.
No.
Saw like
rhino singular, like there's one.
Yeah, I didn't see rhino. Name. Yeah. Ostriches, terrifying.
They have ostriches.
They're like dinosaurs.
Yeah.
They're huge. They're like 8 feet tall.
I'm quite scared. I had a nightmare once about them, and ever since then, I've just kind of.
They're huge.
Because they can also kill you.
They look like sort of velociraptors.
Yeah.
If like they're fast, they've got these long necks and these beady eyes.
I'm aware of what an ostrich looks like.
But there are smaller ones and bigger ones.
Yeah.
These are like the big birds.
Yeah,
with long, long necks. Really scary.
Can you ride one? You could ride
a small child. I bet.
A small child. Yeah.
Tarzan in the cartoon definitely rides one. I wouldn't want to, though.
Wow. Yeah. What an experience.
It is great.
Welcome back.
It is nice
and
to be back.
And obviously,
I've had a long recovery.
Apologies for the delay. I didn't actually mind. I didn't send James and Chase an email. I was like, it's not going to do anything. It's not going to change anything. I was, so basically, obviously, James and I, we run this show completely independently. And so we are, James is the only other person I can share show stuff with. Yeah. So when James is not only far away, but out of communication, that means I've just sort of walking around with days of Pop Kitchen business to discuss.
And you were very good. I saw the emails like being, every time I go to a hotel, I'd get into Wi-Fi firing off.
But I had loads of stuff to discuss, but I had no one to talk about it with. Plus I'm working from home, plus my flatmates aren't around that much. And I did notice a couple of times I was getting a little bit silly. Two things.
You and your underpants just pacing like a lion in captivity.
Not far off. I mean, two things that were actually June related. Mm. One was that I was just working, and you know we talked last week about how the word Bene Gesserit is a funny
silly
word.
Yeah.
I was just there and I just went, Bene Gesserit, did it, Bene Gesserit.
Can't see it now.
Elton just like, Bene Gesserit. Yeah. Anyway, and the other one, I was making food, and again, been in the flat all day on my own. No one to talk to.
You've got to get out. You've got to learn to get out.
And I was just like, I was thinking about June, and I was like, he's the listener, I'll game. He's the listener, Gabe. And then I did that all
Ball
day.
Of Atreides.
Ball Atreides.
He's not here anymore.
Arrakis.
The Duke.
Arrakis.
I killed him.
The Duke. Yeah, the Duke.
Duke.
The Harkonnens.
The Harkonnens. I like spice.
There's something about the name Listen, Al Gabe. That suits Trump's kind of intonation. Not to raise Trump on this podcast, I'm afraid, but he's in there. So that was an afternoon I killed, sort of going around going, listen, Al Gabe.
Yeah.
And my favorite blazer rack is the spice.
It's very easy to slip into Trump.
Yeah.
Just looking at normal things like kitchen roll is useful to me. I do like it.
They want to ban straws.
Hillary doesn't use it. I do.
Yeah.
I do. It was much funnier in the past. Yeah. And now it just absorbs water. On a separate filming note.
Yes, let's get back to film, shall we?
Went to go see a film yesterday, which I'll be talking about today. And they did one of these things where we had trailers for the film, and it was a featurette trailer where the actors are like doing a piece to camera, but like, this film's incredible. Yeah. I'm not going to say what film it is, because they're in this featurette. The actors in the film, in this trailer, are like, you're going to love this movie. It's just so original. And what they did with the twist is just so great. And I'm like, why have you just told me there's a twist?
Huh.
I'm probably going to see this film for the show.
Huh.
And now I've got in my head, there's a twist.
Unless
even
mean,
though it's a type of... It's a
do they mean a genre twist?
No, is they like... meant the twist at the end,
oh,
they said.
Wow. Is it the movie Twisters?
No. That's what there's twists all throughout. No, and I'm just like, why do that?
Yeah.
Even if it is like a horror film,
yeah, I do
why tell me there's going to be... I know a lot of horror films
It's like when we saw...
plots.
We talked about this in a bonus episode a few weeks ago when we saw that movie Fair Play at that screening.
And the
woman doing the Q&A was like, oh, and the twist at the end I thought was brilliant. You and I are on tenterhooks there, being like, okay, well, now we know there's a twist, which is
and
annoying.
And there wasn't a twist. It was a normal plot development,
it was a conclusion. It was a denouement.
Yeah, just terrible. That really annoyed me. I won't tell you what film it is because I don't want you guys to have to know that there's a twist.
So you join us for episode 120. If you're a new listener to Pop Kitchen, welcome. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. We're talking about two films today. One is out in cinemas and one is soon to be out in cinemas, in the UK at least.
And thank you to everyone who has been watching, listening to the episodes recently. We had a huge bump with all the Dune stuff. Lots of people excited to come into there. Yes. Those two, the review episode, the spoiler cast episode, all did great. So thank you for joining
thank
us
you.
If you're new.
Thank you very much.
There's like loads of other stuff.
Welcome to the club. So if we were to summarize today's films in one word, it would be lesbians.
Yes.
Two films about lesbian main characters.
Mine was like super lesbian. Was yours super lesbian?
I don't walk around with a lesbian scale in my pocket, but it is front and foremost. I mean, so we're doing two films.
Yeah.
I've seen Love Lies Bleeding,
yes,
which is a Kristen Stewart movie. How about this? Kristen Stewart, 80s, bodybuilding, guns, steroids, neon, needle drops.
Yeah.
That's my movie.
Nice.
And that's out in the UK in May. Mm-hmm. So still a bit of time, but it's out in the States right now. A24 movie.
Mine was Drive Away Dolls, which I only found out this morning was they were trying to call it Drive Away Dykes.
Oh.
But for obvious reasons, that title didn't make it through.
That's a shame. That's a good
title. Yeah, Drive Away Dykes, I think it's obviously like offensive in context.
In places that
if you're not sort of privy to
opened
the,
up their minds
the tone of this film, I think you'd be like, oh, that's but Drive part, Away
like, but also know, my very literal part of my brain is like, you mean on the side of the road? the dykes that prevent flooding? Is this set in the Netherlands? Is it, yeah.
It's a geology. No,
geography, James. Geology is rocks.
Well... sure, okay. I was thinking like footpath erosion and like longshore drift.
Oh, yeah, fair.
But yes, raunchy, zany lesbian comedy, Drive Away
Directed
Dolls.
Directed by
Ethan Coen of Joel and Ethan Coen.
One of the Coens.
Gone and solo. Written by his wife.
Which isn't Frances McDormand because she's married to Joel Coen.
Trisha Cook.
Trisha Cook?
Is it Trisha Cook?
That does ring a bell. What else has Trisha Cook done? What else has she cooked up?
Trisha Cook.
Share with the class, James.
Doesn't say anything else she's done. Drive Away Dolls, Where the Girls Are, The Thorny Rose, Don't Mess with Texas, Honey Don't.
Drive Away Dolls, written by Trisha Cook. Okay, I've not heard any of those, but we will be getting into those today. So a nice double bill there for you. Oh, wait, where's your set? Is it
1999 America?
Okay.
On the route to Tallahassee.
Right. And mine is 1980s America it doesn't say, but I want to say like Wyoming, you know.
Nice.
Really open plains. So we've got that, and then we've got emails, and then we've got games as ever. So let's do those movies now. So let's do Love Lies Bleeding, which is the name of a flower, I didn't realise. It's also just like quite a cool title. And
I recognise the words.
Love Lies Bleeding, yes. Yeah. It's kind of poetic. Ooh, love, pain, blood. Like I mentioned in the intro, it is set in the 1980s. led by Kristen Stewart. Nice. It's got Kristen Stewart, a relative newcomer called Katie O'Brien, Dave Franco, Ed Harris, Jenna Malone. Okay. And it's directed by Rose Glass, who people might know from a movie called Saint Maud that came out about 4 years ago, which one that like I never saw it, but I heard as an independent film, people were quite interested in it.
Yeah.
It was like one of those films that like looks like a horror, but it's not really about a horror. It's about like her going through stuff. So anyway, nice. Here we have Love Lies Bleeding. Like I said, that's set in the 1980s. Here's the basic plot. Kristen Stewart she works at a bodybuilding gym.
Cool.
In 1980s, I want to say, I don't think it's ever specified, it's either Arizona or Wyoming yeah. or Nevada. It's like west of America, Midwest.
Yeah.
She is very, the gym she works in is very popular and it's full of like very aggressive male slogans. Like, you pain is your body telling you you're doing the right thing yeah. and all this stuff. And she is having a very depressed existence, trying to unblock toilets and... Wow. There is just so much cigarette smoke in this whole film. She smokes cigarettes, she sweats cigarettes, yeah. it's all around. Meanwhile, Katie O'Brien plays Jack, who's a newcomer into town. She arrives in town. She's heading to Las Vegas to yeah. take part in a bodybuilding championship. And she is a bodybuilder herself. Kristen Stewart just runs the gym, but Katie O'Brien is a bodybuilder herself. Obviously, their paths... intersect with the fact that she wants to use the gym, and there's a sort of have a bit of a meet cute, if you can call it that, and they strike up a relationship between the two of them that is very passionate, very physical, very intimate, very exciting. To Lou, who's Kristen Stewart's character, Jack is everything she's been wanting for. You know, Lou is in this sort of very hyper male world. In comes someone who's not only a woman that she's attracted to, but also someone who's gay as well. Okay. Meanwhile, Lou's father, played by Ed Harris, who is good in everything.
I always love
seeing Ed Harris. Yeah. And he is, not only is he at his most fearsome, Ed Harris only needs to squint to be scary.
Yeah.
And he's in this film, but he's bald like Ed Harris is, but got ridiculously long hair that stretches from the little bit of hair he's got at the back of his head right down. He's in these odd glasses.
He plays determined very well.
And he's got the voice. His voice is
National
amazing.
Too.
He's got like a leathery voice. It's just so wonderful. Yeah. He does authority very well. Yeah. Like in The Rock. You seen The Rock? With Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage? I digress.
Probably.
You also have Dave Franco, who from the first frame that you see him, you're like, you are a royal scumbag. And you know that because he's got this terrible mullet, which has got shaved at the sides, but like in rat tails down at the back. He's just like, and his moustache, he's just like...
The mullet's back. You could
smell him on screen. Yeah, like, you are such a scumbag. Anyway, so you have this exciting relationship start up, and then... Ed Harris's character, Kristen Stewart's father in this, is a crime boss, though. He is he runs a shooting range at which Katie O'Brien goes to work, not knowing that he's Kristen Stewart's father, but unbeknownst to everyone, he is actually a criminal running a very secret thing. They are estranged, Kristen Stewart and Ed Harris. You have this kind of tension. Things happen. Things don't go necessarily to plan. There is blood, there is violence, and there is a criminal underworld that kind of sucks this plot in. So the film is very much a stylish 80s sexploitation thriller throwback, and it is very wild. The film is a lot wilder than I would expect.
Yeah.
It is accurate in being a 80s exploitation thriller in the sense that it is not only vividly captured and styled like that, but it also does feel like the kind of thing you would find on late at night on a Saturday in the 80s. If you came back to your trailer and you flicked it on, you'd be like, what is this? Because it gets quite strange sometimes sometimes in a way that it can pull off and sometimes in a way that I don't think quite works.
Okay.
So let's talk about stuff that works. So first of all, Katie O'Brien, great screen presence, vulnerable but also physically imposing. And the strength of the whole film is that it is queering a very hyper male, hyper masculine, hyper American space of guns, gun ranges, and bodybuilding. And it has this really, really infectious detail about being what is the grotesque carnival of America, particularly in the 80s when everything was very over the top. And so there's a seediness and a grimness and a dirtiness to everything. And the bodybuilding, you know, there are steroids in this and muscles bulging uncomfortably, and you know, the obsession and the sort of like, you know, you could do a whole deep reading about like the fact that the men run the gun range, and it's like this phallocentricism about, you know, weaponry and holding cold metal in your hands. Like, that's interesting. And like, when I say it gets quite grotesque and carnivalesque towards the end, it kind of does it. It reminded me a fair amount of Requiem for a Dream in the third act.
Right, yeah.
The relationship between Katie O'Brien and Kristen Stewart's characters is great and really exciting. That's where the film feels to be the most subversive and interesting, because it's, like I said, it's queering this very male space. Their interactions are passionate. The sex is full and frank and exciting and, you know, personal to them in a way. I believe that's the way those two characters interact. It's just like, I was like, this is... Sorry, motorbike going past. And there it goes.
Wow.
It's a really, really, I was like, this is really exciting. Also, there's a really good, as you'd expect for a movie set in the 80s that's very slick, great use of music. And actually, not just great use of music, but there's one particular sequence where they use the song Nice Mover by Gina X Performance. And like, the whole 2 minute, 3 minute sequence is really well done. And I thought, this is not just a great needle drop. You're actually perfectly catching me up on where every single character is at the moment, what every single character is doing, without telling me in dialogue. You're just showing me the kind of the state of play and bringing me up to speed. And I remember when that was on, I was like, this is really, I was like, yeah, I'm really going with that. That's really slick. There's also like, when that violence happens, it's quite squeamish and squelchy. And there's a particular central piece of violence that happens in the middle of the film that in my screening room, everyone was like, oh goodness. And it reminded me a little bit of Drive, like how you just have this complete blast of splatter violence happening in the middle of it. So I like all those ingredients in there. And some people have come out and said, this is a film that is a bold piece of new independent filmmaking that is radical and wild and crazy, and it marks a high point of independent cinema at the moment. And I'm like, well, it's there a little bit, but I also think I become unstuck in the second half, because it basically, with this whole criminal underworld subplot, it moves into being a thriller in the second half. And the problem is, that's where it becomes unstuck, because it's really quite underwritten, underdeveloped, and undercooked as a thriller. So the things that happen in the second half, in terms of it being a thriller, I'm like, that is very cliche. That is very shallow. Like, that, the plotting is very obvious, quite silly, and actually quite preposterous. And yes, you get a little bit of that with the territory. It's a genre film. You know, it's going to be slightly over the top, maybe melodramatic drama. But there's just, and maybe I'm being too literal and logical on it, but there's just a couple of things I'm like, yeah, that's just a bit silly. And for example, Ed Harris plays a criminal, you know, boss of criminal underworld. And there's a scene we see with him talking with the chief of police at a bar in front of everyone, and the chief of police is there in his full uniform, and he's basically been like, you know, giving the cops some money to go and look at something. And it might sound petty, but I'm like, why, this cop is just in front of everyone in uniform hanging out with a known criminal mastermind. Like, I don't know, just like, really? Is that petty? Does that sound petty on my part? Does it sound petty?
No.
I think just small things like that. I'm like, why would that, anyway. And there's some moments that I thought were really silly that some people in my screening room laughed at, but almost laughed at in uncertainty. And I think some people have referred to this as it being like, oh, darkly comic. And I'm like, I think that's being kind, because I think the film plays those moments quite straight. And actually, those aren't funny. Those are just a little bit off. The Jenna Malone is in this in a really underused subplot about domestic abuse. And it's like, it really does feel just like a plot device. And I'm like, Jenna Malone is a good actor and deserves more space in this film. And it's sort of strange for a film that is so much about women and agency to use a domestic abuse thing just as a plot device. And I'm like, if you're going to include that, can you actually substantiate it a bit more and not just have Jenna Malone turn up with bruises all over her face? Like, there's more to it than this. The creative decisions get stranger and stranger. There's one thing to do with like Ed Harris and a bug at one point, and all of us just sort of went, okay, sure, I guess, why not? At this point, do whatever you want, because the film gets crazier. And there's one very particular creative decision right at the end that is so out there that you want to think it's some big metaphor or you want to think it's something great, but personally, I was like, yeah, no, it's lost to me, I'm afraid. Right. That's no good for me. I also think for Kristen Stewart, I like Kristen Stewart as an actor. Yeah, however, I've also realised I haven't actually seen her in that much. The most thing, I saw her in Spencer, which I thought she was good.
Yeah.
And then I think I've seen her in maybe in Adventureland like a few years ago, but I've never seen the Twilight films.
Yeah. It's not her best work.
Well, exactly.
I think she'll be remembered for.
And I think...
She's good in Camp X-Ray. I think she does a lot of stuff I don't see, to be honest.
And I don't personally think this role is great for her. I don't think she's a bad actor. I think the role is actually quite limiting. And there's been a couple of times with the dialogue, I thought, you're a little bit...
Actually, the Huntsman films.
That's right, yeah. But it's like, this is making you seem quite wooden, but you're not. You're not wooden.
Watch Camp X-Ray if you haven't seen that. That's a great Kristen Stewart film.
Anyway, so I would say it's different. It's stylish. It's wild. But I think it unravels in the second half. I think it's flawed by the fact that it is a kind of undercooked thriller.
Yeah.
And that was slightly disappointing. So... Okay. But online, some people have got crazy reviews saying, oh my goodness, this is, wow, what a cinematic experience. This is so bold. And I just had, what a hoot. And I'm like, I think it's just bringing it down a little bit.
People who aren't sort of maybe watching as many films are like more taken by it than if you've seen a lot of these things before.
And I was really, especially in the first half, I was like, oh, I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes. And then it kind of just becomes fairly generic. And maybe there is a whole darkly comic undertone that I was not reading the film as. Maybe if I watched it again, I'd say, oh, okay, it's much more tongue-in-cheek.
How long?
It's 1:45.
Okay, yeah.
But nice.
Well, we'd love to hear from people if they get the chance to see it in May when it's out.
It's out in May in the UK, but that is out at the moment in the States. So right, if any American listeners have seen it and have any different opinions, please let me know. It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, if you've received it differently or similarly...
Yes.
Send your thoughts into popkitchenpodcast.com. That was Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Lies Bleeding. I feel like I will...
Love Lies Bleeding.
Yeah.
Love Lies Bleeding.
Lies Bleeding. Yeah. Does love lie bleeding?
There is blood and there is love.
Is it lying bleeding?
And there are people lying in blood.
Or like love lies is bleeding.
Love lies. Mm. Anyway.
Well, I love lies bleeding.
There will be blood.
Great. So next up in our double bill is Drive Away Dolls, which I said in the beginning was originally, I just found out this morning doing a little bit of Googling, was going to be called Drive Away Dykes, but that title, for all reasons, is probably obvious, never made it. I'll get on to sort of that sort of attempted approach for sort of more zaniness and maybe not quite coming off later. But it's directed by Ethan Coen of the Coen brothers, written by his wife, Trisha Cook. It is a sort of sleazy, zany, lesbian road trip comedy. And it's about two gay friends played by Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan. I'm sorry if I haven't pronounced that properly. They decide to drive away to Tallahassee.
In the late 90s, you're saying?
1999, end of the millennium. And sort of before we meet them, we have this very zany, wacky opening scene with a Pedro Pascal. And it's sort of very violent and it's very kooky and it's all over the place. And we sort of are introduced to these crime bosses who are after this briefcase, and we know that something inside the briefcase is very special, and it sort of is a MacGuffin that drives the film. And so do you know the concept of a drive away? I'd sort of heard vaguely familiar.
A driveway.
So in America, if there is a car that needs to go from one place to another, like one state to another, and there are people that also need a car to get from one place to another, you can turn up at these shops and be like, hi, I just need a car. And the guy will go, oh, well, this car actually needs to go to here.
Oh, yeah.
If you drive it, you can have it for free with a deposit and blah, blah, blah. Sure. And you just have to get it there. It's quite fun. It's sort of I don't know if this actually still happens in America. I'm sure it's like a relic from time gone by. You just get like rent a car. And so these two, this sort of slightly dodgy car drive away business from a character called Swirly, who's very Coen Brothers in setup.
I've seen the trailer played by Bill Camp, who's in everything.
Yes, and he gets this call from the crime bosses being like, listen, you're going to have two people come in. They need to take the car with the briefcase. They got to drive it to Tallahassee. They're going to ask you to drive it to Tallahassee. He's like, okay, fine. And then who immediately walks in but Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan, who are like, hi, I'd like to take a car to Tallahassee. And he's like, oh, it must be them. Off they go with the car, with the briefcase and another package in the boot. And of course, now the crime bosses turn up and be like, we're here to take the car. And he's like, what do you mean you took the car? And so now you've got this comedy bosses chasing.
It's a caper.
For chasing away. And on the way, the two girls visit many different lesbian bars. They eventually discover the briefcase in the back, and there's a shot where the camera shows the other side of the briefcase and their eyes light up, sound familiar. And one of them, Margaret Qualley's character, is much more confident. She's got this big bra, tits and X in, and she's very confident with her sexuality and being gay, and is storming through the lesbian bars on the road. But then you've got the sort of opposite of that, which is played by Geraldine Viswanathan, who's very shy, very sort of uptight about her sexuality, and they sort of play against each other in that way. And they're very sort of this odd couple being sort of as a comedy duo. And then you've got this very familiar idea of like these two fumbling around gangster crime guys who are both like going to the places they've been to behind them and making lots of mistakes. And why would you say that we're going in there getting injured along the way, sort of Home Alone style? It's very zany, trashy. It's a comedy, but I think I chuckled maybe twice and I went, that's funny. I don't think it ever really got me. Margaret Qualley speaks in this very broad Texan accent. Yeah. And she's one of those characters that says an awful lot, but speaks an awful lot, but says very little. And I feel like you've spoken so quickly, but I don't think if I slowed down your dialogue and I started to listen to what you actually say, it would actually be that profound. I'm sure she's been told to speak in this like, well, I'm from Texas, we gonna do this, and blah, 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 but it all just ends up being
noise.
A lot of noise. It reminds me a lot of films like Pulp Fiction, obviously, Pineapple Express, even Burn After Reading for a more Coen Brothers thing, but it never gets to the highs of any of those. Yeah. It is more just sort of borrowing and lifting very familiar tropes. Even the opening is definitely a reference to a TV show, which I won't mention in case you want to see it. But it just made me think of watching it many, many better films, and I just seeing a lot of character dynamics lifted from other films that are actually sort of pioneering those ideas, and you've just lifted them to make a very sort of safe and sort of humorous comedy. It's a lot of penis jokes, a lot of vagina jokes, a lot of penis vagina jokes, a lot of vagina penis jokes.
And that's, vagina jokes?
Yes, those
penis jokes?
No, less so. Less so. They're always like, sort of a vagina involved. So the runtime is 84 minutes, which on
that's a tight one.
That's why honestly it was clinching why I saw it. So I was like, it's 84 minutes, and I thought, oh, maybe this is like a really cohesive, slick, sharp comedy. But actually, when I'm finishing it, I don't get the sense that this is something that's been really tightly and carefully woven together. I instead think this has just been fumbled together in a lot of ways and probably cut and reduced down to its most basic essentials to sort of be left me feeling it's a little bit light on substance, a little bit light on originality. It's so okay to borrow from sort of many great films, many sort of laugh out loud road trip comedies, crime films that have been pioneering in their own way. But you didn't really give me anything more interesting to chew on in your space, in your film. The whole like titling mishap of wanting to call it Drive Away Dykes and be this like bold, outrageous, cult lesbian, modern classic film. And the fact that it's sort of almost been downgraded to Drive Away Dolls, which is obviously a more appropriate title for marketing. But I'm like, oh, maybe this is quite telling that the film you sort of really thought you could get away with making in your head isn't actually the final product.
It's had all the edges shaved off of it.
Totally. Kind of, and it's not that it's 84 minutes because it's really just an efficient shit-hot story. It's like just quick, bish-bosh, familiar jokes, familiar characters, and we're done. It's got a couple of fun cameos in there that sort of get your attention back. But even in 84 minutes, people are speaking, I'm not really listening. Performances are fine. It's very zany. I think, unfortunately, it will be slightly forgotten because of its lack of originality. And I don't think just adding this sort of the tone and the humour of... Well, it's not the tone of the humour. I don't think adding the introduction of a lesbian couple through this film actually provides enough originality for its actual script.
I see. Okay.
So a little bit disappointed. I didn't have a bad time with it. I just... I found it barely funny, barely unentertaining. And just all the things that were familiar, I'm thinking, that's a better film.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a better film. I just recommend you watch a bunch of other things instead, or rewatch a bunch of other things instead. So that's Drive Away Dolls.
Drive Away Dolls there. Well, let us know your thoughts if you've seen it to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. Maybe you agree with James, or maybe you disagree and you say, James, yeah, you idiot, you've missed a whole
missed
other subtext
whole
to it.
Bit
don't
of
you
it.
Know it's
the
actually...
The penis was the
thingy was the thingy. Yeah. That was Drive Away Dolls. Again, let us know what you think.
Yeah. George, should we go through some of the emails that we get sent in every single week,
yes,
as always, from our fans to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. This one comes from Eugenio.
Pick one.
Hello, James. Hello, George and James. My name is, oh yeah, Eugenio. Like Eugene, but more complicated. Just Eugene.
Eugene. We're going to go with Eugene.
Reaching to you from Romania.
Eugene.
And I recently found your podcast through Instagram. Nice. I've been watching your videos and catching up with the old ones, and I'm really glad I found you because I really relate to you both and the way you watch / think about movies.
Thank you.
I always believe movies should be watched at least twice to get the full picture.
I agree. Big thing we say here. Yeah.
I enjoyed your conversation very much about underrated movies / actors, best trailers, worst best endings, and I hope you will tackle these topics in the future,
yes,
as well. I have my own recommendation of underrated movies. Testament of Youth, A Monster Calls, The Place Beyond the Pines, mm-hmm, Macbeth, brackets, the Michael Fassbender, Marion Cotillard version.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The Father with Anthony Hopkins, yeah, that doesn't get talked about that much. Annihilation, You Were Never Really Here, Stoker, and so much more. You have a taste, Eugene, I think.
Those are also, yeah, those are underrated.
What I mean?
I'd say The Father was rated because, yeah, he got Oscar. He won an
and
Oscar.
And I feel like
it.
In the film bro, not film bro, sorry, in the film enthusiast space, The Place Beyond the Pines is rated, but I don't think,
yeah,
a lot of people know about that film.
But I'd say it's also flawed. But Eugene, I get you.
I think that, I haven't seen the Justin Curzon Macbeth.
Oh, I have, Justin Curzel.
Curzel, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've heard very good things. I don't think it gets, yes, talked about.
Well, I saw
enough.
It 9 years ago, but I remember thinking it was really good.
They really had the red powder paint for that one, didn't they?
Oh, it was great. And it's just burnt orange. And oh, it's great. It's very visually great.
Yeah,
and
worth
actually,
watching.
I was reading an interview. I want to say, oh yeah, I think it was the director of All Quiet on the Western Front from last year. He was like, oh yeah, film was a big influence on our vision for this film. And I was
nice.
Like, oh, that's nice that other people respect it.
Fassbender had like the sort of,
yeah, the blood on his
the
face.
The blood,
yeah.
And yeah,
Cotillard
cool.
doing great thing. It was just before they did Assassin's Creed, and then everyone was,
yes,
like, oh
yeah. Anyway. Annihilation, I don't think is what's the face's strongest film.
Natalie Portman?
Yeah, Natalie Portman.
You don't think she's good in it?
No. I don't think it's the director. What's the director's name again?
Alex Garland.
I don't think it's his strongest film. I much prefer Ex Machina. And Ex Machina is one of my favorite films, I think. Ex Machina, yeah, and Men.
I think I need to rewatch Ex Machina. Oh, I think Annihilation. Yeah.
I ended up talking to someone about it on a holiday recently, and I just was reminded about the things I completely forgotten about that film and how great it is, how smart it is.
We haven't talked about the fact that Alex Garland is reuniting with Danny Boyle to make 28 years later,
yes,
with Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it will be it'll be 25, because I think it's going to come out next year or the year after, and it will be sort of 23 years after.
They don't want to wait like 6 years.
They don't want to wait, because Cillian Murphy is so hot right now.
He is, yeah, you do want to get that.
I'd watch that, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your... do you plan to make other... blah, blah, blah. Do you plan to make other videos like this referring to these sort of like...
The editorial kind of list. Yeah,
yes.
we do. We give us time.
We really do. I think we're obviously... The show for us is about covering film as it happens each week and the new,
yeah,
stuff that's coming out. I think George and I are most interested in talking about films that are coming out and,
yeah,
recommending stuff, hearing from you guys talk about the films. We have this long conversation about what's hot, we recommend.
Yeah.
Also, the emails inherently,
yeah,
harken back to things that we like a lot before. So
it was also when we did those lists originally, those,
yeah,
episodes, as fun as they were, it was also still hangover of COVID in cinemas.
There weren't films out every week.
There weren't many that released. Yeah, the releases weren't that thick and fast. Whereas now, not only are there more releases, also you and I are given more access to releases,
yes,
as well, which helps. So
there's definitely a time and place for them, but we will definitely get back to doing them more in quieter months or as bonuses. But yes, stay tuned for that. We'd love to see your thoughts on best soundtracks, for example. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, we've been asked that a few times.
We have been asked that. We do.
Well, you know what? We'll just do it. We'll just do a couple of ones and we refresh,
yeah,
and
refresh
and get back.
Thank you, Eugene.
This next email is from Ollie, who says, "Hello, PK pals. Pulp Kitchen is now my favorite podcast, and I listen to every episode. Thank you very much. However, I'm ashamed to admit there was a time that I used to only listen to episodes if I had seen or was thinking of seeing the films that were featured." That's okay.
That's okay.
Good. I'm glad you graduated.
Yeah.
"Therefore, I now have the pleasure of working my way through the back catalogue of old episodes that I missed. I've just listened to episode 68 from March 2023,
yeah,
it took you a year,
yeah,
where you reviewed Scream 6 and 65. You can probably understand why,
God,
I skipped this one at the time.
Yeah.
Well, I like Scream 6,
sometimes
but 65,
the,
yeah,
bad films are funny to listen to.
Yeah. In the episode, you also discuss Samuel L. Jackson's filmography and the sheer quantity of films that he's in. He's also in a lot of good stuff as well. Everyone knows it, he's in a lot, but when you actually dig into it, it's mind-blowing. But I had a very similar experience recently with Leonardo DiCaprio and the sheer quality of the films he's in. Everyone knows he's a guy that does good films with good directors. But again, when you dig into it, it's even more crazy than you think. Mm. Check out his run of films and directors since 2002. So here
Why
we go, guys.
2002?
Because it's the last 24 years. I don't know. Maybe, or maybe the one before the first one was rubbish.
Titanic. 97.
I know, but maybe he did. I don't know. I didn't make the list. I asked Ollie why.
Romeo and Juliet.
Well, I didn't make the list, but sure.
All right, Ollie, fine.
Starting in 2002 with Martin Scorsese with Gangs of New York, then Spielberg for Catch Me If You Can, Scorsese for The Aviator, Scorsese for The Departed, Edward Zwick for Blood Diamond. Well, you say that, but like Edward Zwick isn't... Blood Diamond's quite good, but Ed Zwick isn't like a household name, is he?
No, but he's peeling it now.
Anyway, Body of Lies, Ridley Scott, Revolutionary Road, Sam Mendes, Shutter Island, Martin Scorsese, Inception, Christopher Nolan, J. Edgar, Clint Eastwood, Django Unchained, Quentin Tarantino, The Great Gatsby, Baz Luhrmann, Wolf of Wall Street, Scorsese, Revenant, Iñárritu, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino, Don't Look Up, Adam McKay, Killers of the Flower Moon, Scorsese. Yeah, he picks his project and he's able to do things very selectively. Ollie, you make a good point. Keep the good stuff coming. P.S. I can't remember if anyone has ever validated James' opinion about Home Alone 3 being underrated, but it absolutely is. He's bang on the money. You've actually been quite validated quite often.
I think it's like the second or third time that's happened. Ollie, I screenshotted your P.S. and sent it to my sisters in our group chat, and we all threw our arms around in jubilation. Thank you for validating
us. I'm going to have to watch it now, aren't I?
As much as I could... Do you know what? It's like, if you didn't grow up with it, I don't know if you're going to be like blown away, but it's probably way better than you think it is.
Okay.
You're totally right. Leonardo DiCaprio's filmography is incredible and varied. It's a lot of. I was gonna say it jumps around different genres, but mostly it's sort of. He does. He jumps around biopics, crime.
Yeah. Also, sorry, we haven't said this yet, but a lot of you have sent in your Dune Part 2 correspondence and your thoughts, which we are great, very welcome to. Obviously, a lot of you have seen it and have thoughts about the whole film and its ending, etc. We're going to talk about those. We'll do a big bonus where we talk about everyone's thoughts and we will go into spoiler territory. So if you're listening, waiting for your Dune email to be read out, it'll be coming out as a bonus episode.
I would say the underrated Leo DiCaprio films of that list are Revolutionary Road. A lot of people anecdotally haven't seen that. That's great. And he reunites with Kate Winslet for that film. I would also say... Do I say Great Gatsby is underrated? I don't know. Body of Lies, I completely forgot about.
It's a quite forgettable film.
I don't remember anything
early
about
Oscar
it.
Isaac in that film.
Isaac.
I did put the Isaac.
Yitzhak.
Isaac.
Yitzhak.
Oscar Isaac.
But maybe all of his films are adequately rated.
Yeah, I think he's rated.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's all. Thank you so much. Next up is Laura, who says, "Hi, pulpy boys." Brackets George and James. James and George, hope you're well. It's my second time writing in, as I've been continuing to love the show and have a few points I'd love to share with you both. In a recent episode, you guys talked about whether you imagine a typical listener when recording the show and referring to us. And George mentioned he always pictures a perfect person driving. I think that was me.
I think it was James. You.
That's George. I just wanted to say that this is absolutely me. I'm quite a nervous driver and have struggled with anxieties related to driving since being out of practice from lockdown. And I have to say that the pod has been endlessly helpful in keeping me calm and relaxed on my drives to and from work. I now even look forward to my drives because I now get to catch up on the latest movie news and fun chats with you guys. So thank you so much for that and keep the episodes coming. Laura, I do sirens on our end for you. For the person driving who... I don't want you to look in your wind mirror to think that the sirens are coming behind you when really it's us. It's crime in my area.
You're driving very well. Well done if you listen to this now. Good. Enjoy your drive.
Oh, yeah.
It's your car.
But concentrate.
Okay. Watch out for that thing!
Secondly, I have to add my 2 pence to the recent debates you guys have had. Chocolate. If it's not eaten out of the fridge with a cup of tea, it's just a waste of time.
Thank you.
Sparkling water. I agree wholeheartedly with James. It tastes like scuba diving or something you drive when you're ill.
It does.
One for one there. Okay.
It does. It tastes like just gas.
I mean, that's what it is.
It just tastes like sand.
I always had to say, in the recent June Part 2 episode 117, you both had me howling at the description of Zendaya as a human sand timer, especially the part about Brolin lifting her up by the ankles. It was so funny, I had to share to my Instagram story. My friend, also called Laura, and I always discuss your episodes and chuckle at the amazing impressions and 10 out of 10 banter.
Thank you.
Plus, I love you guys articulate your opinions on different films and how your views don't always completely align, although for the most part they do. Mm. Laura and I are quite similar in that we usually rave about the same things, but occasionally our opinions will differ. To acknowledge this, we like to refer to it as the 2%, as it doesn't happen often and we agree on 98% of things. So when we occasionally disagree, we just say 2% and we know we're coming at it from different viewpoints, something we could very much apply to you guys too. One final point. I was wondering if you guys have watched any Masters of the Air on Apple TV Plus. It's being released weekly and is a really moving show. I know you recently discussed Band of Brothers, so I wondered if you had any plans to watch this new series. I'm really enjoying it and would love to hear your thoughts. Sirens on our end from friend of the show, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. Love
yeah, with the whole like 2% thing, it's we do disagree, but I think sometimes when you spend for sort of unnaturally for most friends, like up to an hour understanding each other's opinions, yes. You sort of, even though you differ, I go, oh, I have a good understanding of George's point.
Yes.
So it's probably, I'd necessarily agree 98%, but I sort of comprehend your opinion quite well, yes. And vice versa. So I don't necessarily go.
We're yet to really disagree on a film. I think we're mostly there.
I think so one of us will love something and one of us will be like, ah.
Yeah, well, sometimes one likes the other more.
Yeah, but we sort of inevitably have similar expectations and tastes from films.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this show.
Yeah.
I have one friend.
It'd be quite exhausting if we really just constantly disagree.
I have one friend who's a complete contrarian, and asking his opinion on a film is like a complete Russian roulette, because I'll be like, what did you think of this one? He'd be like, I really liked it. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, you haven't seen There Will Be Blood? You finally watched? He was like, yeah. God, that Daniel Day-Lewis doesn't half overacted it. And I was like, oh.
I think we also have a good balance of like, I know recently mainstream comic book Star Wars stuff has been great, but I do think we want the same things from the good ones.
Yes.
It's not like one of us is like, oh no, I wouldn't dare watch like a sort of mainstream studio film. No. Like we do generally want those things to succeed, but we agree when they're very much insufficient.
Absolutely.
Doing that. But Laura, thank you very much for your lovely email. Sorry, George, did you want to talk about Masters of the Air?
Masters of the Air, I've only watched two episodes. I watched two episodes this weekend and I was really on the fence about it. I will just say, obviously, I don't want to review. This isn't a review because I haven't seen the whole show and I have heard it gets better.
Yeah.
But personally, I found it very, very too handsome. The whole thing looks too handsome. It's everyone's gorgeous. It looks like a Breitling advert, expensive watch advert.
Can I say Apple TV Plus across the board?
It looks too
slick. It's very slick and clean, clean edges. And that works for some of the projects, but other times it's there's a real sort of clean grain on everything.
Do you know when you see something and something's super low budget and you're like, oh, that looks a bit odd?
Yeah.
This is like that, but the opposite. It's like sometimes this is so high budget. And it's very glossy. Everyone's very handsome in it. And like the problem is that because it says it's made by the people who made Band of Brothers, you inevitably end up comparing it to that, especially because I also recently rewatched it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Band of Brothers, 25 years later, still holds up fantastically. And watching this within two scenes, I was like, oh, I feel like I'm watching characters. I'm not watching people. Yeah. Band of Brothers felt like people. Also, all the actors in Band of Brothers like looked like real people in the sense that they weren't at all stunning men.
Overly made up.
They were young, fit, slightly handsome, but like a lot of them looked like guys you'd see in the army, screwed up faces, pointy noses, jutting chins. Whereas everyone in Masters of the Air looks like they've just come out of drama school with fantastic hair and look wonderful with excellent shearling jackets. I think, and that was, so I'm like, oh, and I think, sorry, that I find a lot of the forced male camaraderie, especially the Americanized, hey, buddy, oh man, come on, don't worry about it. All that stuff I find a little bit sickening, there's something, sorry, I'm going to go on this now. I was telling James off air. In the second episode, they do something which I think is so out of date and really infuriating, which is three RAF characters come into it and they're, of course, really, really super posh and out of touch and stiffy and we're British, so we have a stick up a bum. Yeah. And I'm like, this is just so so behind and it doesn't help because it makes the show seem, again, like this kind of hagiographic, very American, very broad. Sanctifying. Look at us. Oh, we're self-promote, self-congratulatory thing. And I'm like, it just needs a bit of dirt and needs a bit of grit. And I might stick with it, it might get better, but it just doesn't help that Band of Brothers still is a superior show, having only been made 25
years ago. High production design look is an interesting thing to have apply across like an entire suite of, like a entire catalogue of things. Because you think like the Apple TV properties, which is like Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon, those look really slick, but those are also like Scorsese and Ridley Scott, which will be the highest quality production you can get on a film. But then like similarly, you take that to like a lower end comedy with like Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen, and I'm like, did this need that
level of comedy on it?
Whereas like Superbad, I know a different, like was a bit rough and had like dirt under its nails, and it's not the sharpest, most color graded thing you've ever seen.
I think we talked about this before, is like creatively, like, it's okay. Obviously, Martin Scorsese, give him all the money he wants because he's been doing it for seven decades.
It will look incredible.
It'll look amazing. Yeah. But like creatively, it's sometimes not always helpful to have unlimited resource. You need to be fighting over you're on set making creative decisions every day because you're running out of money. And like, I'm not saying you should be impoverished as a filmmaker, but some of the best movies are made under budget, you know, on a tight, restricted budget. You have to make innovative decisions. It's good for innovation.
Memento looks like Nolan was hovering over a DSLR filming it. But the film actually looks really good and really cool, but it's the concept, which is what sells you on it, and interesting minimalist cinematography that makes that film special.
So we were just also talking, just on Apple TV as a thing, we were talking off air about how Apple having this sort of strange thing at the moment where they had three big movies that they basically put their $1 billion film budget for Apple TV on three movies instead of breaking it up into smaller properties, which doesn't seem to have worked, because it was Killers of the Flower Moon, successful, didn't quite make as much money as I think they expected, but solid. Award contender, didn't actually win anything though.
Yeah.
Then there was Napoleon, did solidly, money-wise.
We liked Killers way more than Napoleon.
Oh yeah,
we think Killers is fantastic.
Killers was fantastic. Fantastic film. But in terms of just on return on investment.
Yeah. No awards.
No awards. Yeah, got publicity. Probably the most successful one there. Yeah. Great. Napoleon, less successful. Money-wise, did okay. No awards recognition, except for I think there was like costume and design and things like that. But I think Apple were probably hoping, Joaquin Phoenix nominated. Vanessa Kirby nominated.
Director.
Ridley Scott, no. And then Argyle, which was a commercial and critical disaster and cost more than Dune Part 2.
Which is nuts.
It's insane. I mean, that it really is stupid.
That just means that I don't know if it's the actors that are being paid too much or there's just a hugely inflated budget for that. That's astonishing to me that film cost more than Dune Part 2.
Argyle cost $200 million. Dune Part 2 cost $190 million. Again, a difference of only $10 million. But you can make a movie on $10 million. That's the difference. So if you looked at the nearly $1 billion that you spent on three movies there, maybe diversify the portfolio a little bit there, Apple, and break it up. Killers of the Flower Moon, hey, we love it. Don't change that. That was great. But
Indy 5 also, not theirs.
But not that with theirs, but
280, 350.
The most expensive movie ever made, wasn't it?
Was it? No.
Was it
second?
Or was it the most expensive movie made last year? Hang on.
I think it was of the year. I would have brought this to you once. It's not the most expensive movie ever made.
I thought it was.
I think Harrison Ford's getting like 90, 100 mil for that.
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe it was the most expensive movie made last year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This next email is from India, who says, "Hi guys, new listener here, but already a big fan of the show. I'm wondering if you might be able to give me some advice. For context,
two guys giving unsolicited advice on a podcast?
Never!
Hold my beer.
For context, I've been living in Amsterdam for the last 2 years and using a cinema subscription called Cineville.
Cool.
I pay €18 a month and I can see an unlimited number of films at any independent cinema in the country.
That's not bad.
That's pretty cool. Cineville is very popular here and I think it is very effective in creating a strong cinema culture. There's 10 plus independent cinemas in Amsterdam alone, which all screen both new releases and older movies, and pretty much every screening I've ever attended has drawn a big crowd.
Nice.
Anyways, my uni course is coming to an end, so I'll be moving back to London. I will really miss Amsterdam's cinema culture as me and my friends go to the movies together twice a week. I wanted to ask if you have anything similar to the Cineville in the UK, i.e. good value, unlimited cinema subscriptions. I'd also love to know if there are any cinemas in London that you would particularly recommend, especially if there are any that do interesting programming and screen more than just new releases. Basically, any insider tips RE London cinemas would be hugely appreciated. Thanks so much, and sorry if this is something you've covered before. All the best, India. P.S. If you're ever in AMS, obviously Amsterdam, you should go to Lab 111. That's my favorite cinema, and they also serve great sourdough
Sounds
pizza.
Like an underground rave.
And they make their own craft beer and wine, and theatre Tuschinski is the most beautiful cinema in the city, but sadly not part of the Cineville subscription.
Oh, cool. In terms of subscriptions, just full transparency, we have been paid to sponsor cinema brands before, but this is not paid to sponsor.
We're not currently being paid for
You can do the premium offerings in London, which are like your very much boutique-y sofa, glass of Malbec and a pizza at the cinema. You've got Everyman and Cousin, both of
Picture
those.
House as well.
Picture House. You've got, those are sort of your premium offerings where the pricing still varies, but you can pay upwards of £18 for a cinema ticket. Yeah. So you're getting a premium experience, but you get a much more comfier seat, smaller screen, smaller theatre. And both Everyman and Curzon do memberships where you can pay, it's usually a yearly
and
fee.
Picture House as well. Sorry, all three. Sorry. Yeah.
You can pay a yearly fee. And you get, I think they have like a couple of bands between them, and you get
five free cinema tickets with one of them.
Yeah,
discounted sometimes you just food and drink.
Discounted food and drink. And I think like my parents used to have the Everyman one, which was great because I used to use it all the time. But they were going once or twice a week, and it made sense because they were going and they'd get cheaper wine, cheaper food, and they really used it, but they don't anymore. But so there is that, but you sort of get different offerings of films, fewer timing options than you do in a multiplex. Do Odeon do one?
Yeah, Odeon and Cineworld both do it's called Limitless, only Odeon, I think it's called Unlimited for Cineworld, which is, you know, you pay a set amount every month and you can see as many films as you want in that time frame for that amount, and you get discounted food and drink and things like that. Vue, I think, is a different one because Vue, speaking just from a broad experience, they don't offer a unlimited subscription. They offer cheaper cinema tickets.
Yeah. Days of the week.
It's on certain days of the week in certain venues and stuff. Showcase is the other big brand, but you don't get as many of them in London. I don't think they offer unlimited. They offer something like an insider, which again is like cheaper tickets at certain times of week and discounted stuff like that.
I would say for me personally, like it's in London, you want to sort of base, if you are going to go for a subscription, like find the convenient one that's near you, and if it works, go for it. So I'm quite lucky. I have a big multiplex near me. It's like a 10-minute walk, and then I have a lovely boutique-y one near me that sort of operates for both. So if I really just want a lovely little sit down, I'll go to that one, and then my multiplex has, like, if there's a comic book film out, there's a screening every half an hour, and it's like, pick when you want to go.
There's a brand of multiplex cinema which I have just mentioned, but I'm not going to mention now, but I've got two of those near me. One in walking distance, which is only three screens, but very nice quality, much more boutique-y. And one that's 5 minutes tube distance, 12 screens, not as nice quality. But between having those two things right next to me, I obviously have I have an unlimited subscription for that cinema brand because it means I'm served. I'm therefore served by that thing. And for doing the show, it's really important that we have that.
You know what I also really believe? You know how like you should, like, seafood tastes better by the sea?
Right, yes.
And like certain foods taste better like where they should be. I believe that certain art house films taste better at a boutique-y art house cinema.
Totally.
And certain films are better at a big multiplex.
Yeah.
So there's like, you know, like The Settlers, which I covered recently, that is to be enjoyed at a twinkly, cute boutique-y cinema.
Absolutely. Anatomy of a Fall, boutique cinema.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But
June Part 2,
big
blast
multiplex.
My head off. Yes. Vibrate me out of my seat. Yeah.
And to answer your other question, which we talked about a bit before in the show, do you recommend any individual cinemas in London? Well,
we asked this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did offer it, but two. We love Picture House Central. Yeah. It's a nice place. It's a great venue. It's also a great meeting spot in Central London, the great bar upstairs. And also great sound. Sometimes you go to cinemas, particularly multiplexes, and the sound is just a little bit dim.
We saw Sisu at one of those.
Yes, and Sisu. Really, and Guardians 3. That was really good.
Yes.
And really comfortable seats. And actually, when they do the London Film Festival, they have the screenings there.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice venue.
And then the BFI IMAX is like...
That's IMAX.
The biggest, the best. They get the hold of 70mm IMAX film reels and they project film reels. Yeah. So Nolan and Hoyt van Hoytema and Emma Thomas will sit in the middle of that screen in London and sound tune and calibrate the screen to their specifications before he puts out a film. Like, he really cares and he knows that screen and he grades for that screen.
And I will even say that actually, even though Leicester Square is like, for anyone who lives in London, it's like, why would you want to go to Leicester Square? The whole area is so mad. But the Odeon, particularly, they've just done out the Odeon Leicester Square venue, which has a balcony floor as well. It's huge. Yeah. They have loads of premieres there. The sound and the screen is actually really good there too. Also, again, one I've mentioned before, but I think as a combination of three, having IMAX, biggest place you can see something, having Picture House Central, comfortable, cozy, lovely.
Yes.
The Prince Charles Cinema in just off Leicester Square. Yeah. So it's independent. And is a place which, programming-wise, will show you things from the past odd things. Yeah. And going there feels like going to an old, not like boutique, but kind of like grungy.
It's right on the edge of Chinatown as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and it's, there's something like sticky floor about it, and yeah, it's kind of like kind of crammed in this one little building, but you go there for that reason, so you have a balance there.
As a Londoner, I used to really pride myself on never going to that part of town, yeah, but since we've been doing the podcast and like great opportunities, like press screeners, premieres, I'm just constantly there now, and I used to just yeah, never want to go.
Doing this show has really made me love Soho a lot.
Yeah,
I feel like yeah, I have a lot of...
Well, Soho I love.
So
it's
great,
it's
yeah,
Leicester Square and that whole pocket from like yes, the Drury Lane down. I never want to be stuck there.
But now I have warm feelings because I'm like, oh, that's where I saw the screen yeah, of this, and that's the premiere of that. But yeah, anyway, that was great.
This last one is from friend of the show, Emily.
Emily
writes in and says, "Hi, James and George, and I appreciate that you've written your email in, I want to say, a thin Avenir font."
Ooh,
just to distinguish yourself. I see it.
How
I
elegant,
see it. Yeah. Good to see you slaying the game so hard recently. Oh, that's us.
Thank you.
Slaying
that
the game.
Has been slayed.
I just finished watching Femme. My God. I reviewed Femme.
Yes. I want to say episode 105.
Nice. I liked it.
Just that November time.
I have never felt so sick watching a film while still rating it so highly. The way I actually felt empathy at points for Preston after he did such a thing to such and such and such. Both Mackay and Nathan Lloyd Stewart Jarrett turned in chilling performances and had to go to the extremes in their roles. The film posed so many questions like, does anyone deserve redemption after causing so much pain? Is revenge ever morally or okay? Mm. Or are people just a product of their environment? I feel the story will stay with me for a long time and achieved all this in around 90 minutes. Brackets, it can be done. It got me thinking, yeah, I just want to say, I think Femme is, I think, a bit underseen, underdiscussed. Yeah. I would go and check it out. I did find it very interesting. It's very tense and deals with interesting conversations about masculinity and clothing, think identity that you wear and you borrow. It was interesting and thought-provoking, and at 90 minutes.
Mm.
It got me to thinking about, Emily goes on to say, it got me to thinking about actors who have been on the precipice of breaking out, but then swinging back like a pendulum.
Oh.
George MacKay had great roles in Pride and the True History of the Kelly Gang, brackets phenomenal, before the huge 1917, which I thought was going to catapult him to massive projects, but I think it didn't seem to. He still turns in fantastical. He still turns in fantastic films, but not to the scale I was expecting. Other people I thought of were Elle Fanning, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Dane DeHaan, Charlie Hunnam, Alicia Vikander, etc.
Okay.
I think I've written in with similar questions before, where I mentioned actors who haven't had a big break yet, but I feel like the above people have and then dropped off. Can you think of any more? / Why do you think this happens? Sorry, this was a long one. Sirens on our end. I mean, lots of different
Can
people
we run
mentioned
through that names. Those names. Yeah.
So, well, George Mackay, first of all, I think I wouldn't sort of say he's dropped off in any sense.
No,
I think
he's around, but
I think he's in that sort of top crop of British actors who's potentially going to get a big role.
I guess Emily's saying that after something like 1917, you'd expect him to be in a Marvel film,
yeah,
or something, fronting a franchise.
Kind of like sort of what, like Austin Butler, Zendaya, Sydney Sweeney are just, they're doing like five films a year right
I feel
now.
I like George Mackay would have been good in June as a Harkonnen.
Yeah, yeah, you could have
got a really sort of...
Got kind of like a steely, yeah, steely face. Yeah, yeah, totally.
But he's around and I do like to see him when he turns up and stuff.
Yeah. So first on that list, Elle Fanning.
I think Elle Fanning gets a lot of work, actually. I don't think she's dropped off. I do think she does a lot of really interesting independent
work. I think she's
work.
Probably quite selective about the things she yes, does and wants to operate in a certain sphere.
I associate her as kind of like she's like a cool girl. She's like a Sofia Coppola kind of...
Yeah.
She operates in indie. That indie space. And
yeah.
I find it interesting how Elle Fanning actually almost superseded Dakota Fanning, her sister. When yeah, Dakota Fanning was in loads of stuff in the
famous
noughties.
Very, very early.
And
very
then Elle Fanning kind of came and has been in lots of interesting stuff. So I think she's around.
Yeah. And then Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I will give you. I feel like he was in the 2010s doing lots of interesting projects. You saw a lot of him and then less so.
I think that's a couple of things. I think, I feel like he was a name. He wasn't yeah, like on the cusp of being a name. Like it was a name. 500 Days of Summer, Inception,
film,
Looper,
yeah,
all that stuff. But I think what happened is that you remember people age, right?
Yeah.
So I think what's happened to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he's reached his 40s and people are like,
what do we cast you as?
What do you cast you as? He's probably also got a family and, yeah, and people think, oh, I don't want to start doing a certain amount of roles. He also had a bit of, I think he did two movies that absolutely bombed. He did The Walk, the Robert Zemeckis movie about the Philip Petit walking between yeah, the Twin Towers.
There's a much better documentary about wire. That, yeah. Which is brilliant.
Really good. And he also did Snowden, the Edward Snowden movie.
Yes.
Oh, so both of those tanked.
A much better documentary called Citizen Four, which you should see.
Exactly. So I think after that, and he has done some stuff. He did the Uber show on Apple TV. He did a show called Mr. Corman on Apple TV.
I was going to say Mr. Corman was on the top.
So he is around and doing stuff. But I agree. I would love to have Joseph Gordon-Levitt come back in like a really good juicy role. But sometimes these actors just need to get a bit older. And then they reach an age bracket where other roles open up to
them. Like they get sent lots of stuff and they just don't really, they're not interested in doing it. He might have gone, look, I've done Inception, I've done this, I don't really want to take this role.
Yeah, you become more selective.
Like, who knows what Mr. Corbin might have been.
Mr. Corman.
Corman might have been like a much easier project for him to take on.
Oh, a whole
scheduling
series.
That's
money taken.
I was going to say, like, Alicia Vikander's on this list. And I know that she had kids, and Michael Fassbender also, she's with Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
He also took years off.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they had kids together. Like, why don't we just look?
We've
done Tomb Raider, we've done Assassin's Creed, all the games. Why don't we just take our money? We don't need to work. You go become a race driver, and then they can come back whenever they want.
The thing about Alicia Vikander is quite interesting, is that because she was, for like 6 months in 2016, like just you couldn't move without seeing stuff about Alicia Vikander, the biggest star.
I mean, she broke out in Ex Machina and was incredible in that
film. Then the Danish Girl. She won an Oscar.
She
came from in like the space of 18 months. She went from being nothing.
She was a Danish actress, she was in Danish things,
but then she was like boom out. As you say, she was in Ex Machina. Boom, Danish Girl. Boom, Oscar won. Boom.
To the Studio Tomb Raider, and then the one with Fassbender, The Light Between Two Oceans. I was going to say The End We Start From, which is Jodie Comer film from this year.
Then she did Tomb Raider, which bombed, and then she just taking a bit of a break. And I just find it interesting now that this actress who was so big, I also think actually she's spoken about how alienating she found the peak of her fame. She found that very, very, very not a nice space to be. And that's also what we were... Again, these people are human beings.
Yeah.
They get older. They don't want to be in that space for too long. It's very competitive. It can be very soul-destroying.
Yeah.
And if you can eke out a living slightly outside of the spotlight...
And you can come back whenever you want. Also, we're totally speculating. Like, we don't know these people personally. But you're also like, if you've made enough money and your priorities change and you go, oh, look, I can very happily take a few years off and be very selective about my next project. I think you would.
She's also did. I mean, like,
she doesn't seem like someone who's chasing the fame dragon relentlessly.
And she has been working. She did a TV show last year called Irma Vep. Like, she's around.
She's probably been filming stuff for like 18 months, and she will come out with stuff either this year or next year, and we just like haven't seen it yet. Charlie Hunnam on there. I would say Charlie Hunnam does lots of stuff.
He's
always in Guy Ritchie things. He's considered like a handsome leaning man. Oh, is he in Rebel
Moon?
He's
in Rebel Moon. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But yes, I think he's around.
Oh, I saw this thing about how Zack Snyder wants to do like his cut of Rebel Moon. You know, the Snyder cut has become like really popular.
But why wasn't he given full creative
thing,
cut?
It's like I just don't know what the decision is. Where it's like he has to get the studio to make a film for him first, and then he makes this like. I don't want a 4-hour version of this film if that's better.
I didn't want a version of this film.
But there is a discipline of being like, oh, like the 4-hour version of my movie is really good. Which I'm sorry, all the other filmmakers are making their movie good in 2 hours or whatever.
Yeah, you have to unless you're Scorsese, who's earned the right to make movies as long as he needs, or like we've often said before, actually, a filmmaker can make a film as long as he wants. As long as they want, right? As long as it's good and justified.
Yeah.
But like, I know Zack Snyder's stuff. It's going to be baggy and uneven. If you're having a 4-hour movie, you've got to be justifying it because you're right, it's a luxury and a privilege that most filmmakers do not have.
Yeah.
Most filmmakers are making movies for $5 million at best on a shoestring budget, having to get it in under 100 minutes.
Because the Batman v Superman thing is that the director's cut of that movie is a lot better, right? But it's not a fantastic film. It's a lot better than the theatrical release. But I'm almost like, because I think they took out some swear words and some violence and some scenes, but I'm like, well, then you should argue that this is what the movie needs to be for it to be released well. You can't just then go back and be like, well, my director's cut's the real version.
But also, you can't just say, well, actually, when it's an hour longer, it's much better. You get more depth of the characters. I'm like, yeah, because you've just bought yourself more time.
Yeah.
You don't get to just sure. If you make your movie 8 hours long, you're going to have more time with each individual character.
Yeah.
Well, duh.
And the Justice League one is like 4.5 hours long. Come on. Well, there you go, guys. We do have more emails to read out, and as we said, we are going to do a June email correspondence special. So stay tuned for that. But that's all we're going to read for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you
as always, send in your emails to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. We'll read them out on the show.
We do like talking about them. We get the debates going. I love it. The questions come in and you and I spin off about something else. It's
beautiful.
Crazy. Thank you.
As always, let's end with the game.
James, this week Pop Kitchen ends as ever
with a game.
We have two rounds for you this week, guys. Two rounds of have these two people been in a movie together, yes or no?
You've got to guess. Quest to know the cost of every damn film ever made.
And you're thinking, have they been or have they been? And if they have, what film is it?
Yeah.
So I've got two rounds for you. Again, the rules are, I'm going to name two actors. Mm-hmm. You have to tell me, quick fire, whether they've been in a movie, yes or no.
Okay.
And if you're able to name the movie, that's great. Bonus but you're point. Probably just going to guess it,
I'll
aren't you?
I'll probably guess it.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Have these two actors been in a movie together? Mm-hmm. Michael Keaton and Vanessa Hudgens.
Damn it, that's so vague. I'm going to say no.
No. James Gandolfini and Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes, they were in that, the last film that James Gandolfini did. I can't remember
enough
the name
said.
Of it.
It's a good movie, yeah. Emily Blunt and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Surely they have been.
What do you
say?
Yes, they have. Looper.
Thank you.
Christopher Walken and LeBron James.
I don't know. I'm going to go no.
No. Keanu Reeves and Kate Hudson.
Keanu Reeves and Kate Hudson. I'm going to go no.
No, correct. Tom Hardy and Chris Pine.
Yes, in This Means War with Reese Witherspoon. Yeah,
absolutely. Jake Gyllenhaal and Patrick Swayze.
Ooh, Patrick Swayze. Oh, is it? Is it Donnie Darko?
It is. Yes. Well done. And lastly, Dua Lipa and Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It's got. Oh no, wait. Was he? Is he in like Argyle or something? I'm gonna go. Yes.
No.
Oh, shit. It could be. There's no guessing. There's no knowing that.
Oh yeah, I've put in a couple of crazy ones in there. In the same way, Christopher Walken and LeBron James could have happened.
Yeah, like Van Damme could have cameoed in Argyle, which I've not seen.
Yeah,
but there you go. Yeah.
Okay, round one. Well done, James. And
what other films has Dua Lipa done? Is it just?
I think that's it.
That's it. Okay, right.
I realised putting her in was a bit of a strange one. Ready for the next round?
Yes, let's go.
Have these actors been in a movie together?
Okay.
James.
Yeah.
Have these actors been in a movie together? Reese Witherspoon and Pedro Pascal.
Ooh, Pedro Pascal. I'm going to go no.
No, they haven't. Christian Stewart and Kristen Bell.
Christian Stewart, Kristen Bell. I'm going to say no.
No, they haven't. Steve Buscemi and Steve Carell.
Steve Buscemi, Steve Carell. Ooh, I'm going to say, have they been the film Dinner for Schmucks?
Ooh, I don't think so.
No, I think no.
They have actually been in a movie together. The movie is called The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, the Magician's one.
All right, yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito.
Yes, twins.
Yes, well done. And also Junior, I think they did a movie with Junior. Yeah. Schwarzenegger's pregnant.
Yes, yeah, that's it.
Jason Segel and Jason Statham.
I'm going to go no.
No, they're not. You're getting these quite easily, actually. Eddie Murphy and Melissa McCarthy.
Eddie Murphy and Melissa McCarthy, I'm going to have to say it's a no.
No, that's right. Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand.
Yes, they did that road trip film.
Yeah, the guilt trip. Yeah, and lastly, Clint Eastwood and Lee Evans.
Lee Evans. What other films is Lee Evans in apart from Something About Mary? I'm going to say no.
No, it was not. Lee Evans, to answer your question, is in a really funny film with Nathan Lane called Mouse Hunt, and he's also in The Fifth Element in one scene.
Is he? It's the most random filmography from someone who's now just doesn't do films.
A funny guy, very talented. He's retired.
Lee Evans is retired. He retired. I remember the announcement on the Jonathan Ross show, whatever year that was, and he just announced it. And I was, even though I didn't really interact with Lee Evans that much, I was just gutted to hear that he wasn't doing stand up anymore.
The most physical comedy and sweatiest.
I remember discovering him, and like my sides were burning with laughter. I've never seen anyone so funny.
There's one, we talk about this in my flat a lot.
Please go and check out like his big live at the O2 stand. If you've never seen a big live at the O2, and then he's done, I think, Wembley a couple of times. Yeah.
We used to have the box set when we were kids.
He was like a huge arena comedian.
Yeah.
Like his comedy was
built. Oh yeah, probably outside of the UK. He's not that known.
But he's been in like a few Hollywood films. He's in There's Something About Mary, and he's just incredible, one of a kind.
He does this thing, what I love about the postal service, about attempted delivery. And he's like, what does that mean? He's like, attempted delivery, it's not Everest.
I'm not going to make it. Attempted delivery.
He's very funny.
He talks about getting an x-ray like for his teeth, and it's like, okay, it's gonna be all right, we're just gonna go behind this door. Yeah. And he's just there with his gun like, oh.
It's so good.
Man.
So
brilliant. Good. Anyway, that was a nice mix-up for you there. Because he could, that's the thing, he has been in movies. If I put Lee Evans and Christopher Walken, that's right. A yes, because they're in Mouse Hunt
together.
Yeah,
yeah.
But no,
I very good. Guys, those were the games. Thank you, George, for providing those. That was good fun. Thank you, as always, for listening. I promise you this one will be up on a Wednesday. Thank you, as always. New episodes every Wednesday.
Every single Wednesday. We'll be back next week as ever. And don't forget to look out for our bonus episode this week, which is discussing your thoughts on Dune Part 2, a proper autopsy of the film. Thank you again for listening. And if you're a new listener and you've made it to the end of the episode,
welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. And you're always welcome. We hope you come next week and we'll have more chats
come
about
next
films.
Week.
Oh, I went very Walken-esque then. Come next week and we'll talk
to the
tea and pulp.
Sarkin.
It's a House of Atreides.
A Bene Gesserit.
Son of the Saracens.
No, he was very well behaved.
He was. Some people have not liked him in it. Some people have not liked him. Yeah, some people have said, oh, Christopher Walken's doing Christopher Walken. I'm like, no, you've got a guy.
Shut your mouth.
Who is old and at the point at which he's almost been pushed off his throne. Mm. And like Christopher Walken has been around the block, but he's getting hazy. But
he's very good in...
You believe that emperor would have been ruthless in his youth.
Yeah. He's great in Severance, non-distracting. And
he's also great. Sorry.
I was going to say, he totally blends into the background and is great in what he does.
He's also great in the Fatboy Slim video, Weapon of Choice. Probably one of the greatest music videos ever made. Do you know the one?
Yeah,
when he's dancing, It's something that's like circulated on TikTok like every 3 months and then will be cut out as a template, but it's iconic. It's fantastic. He flies across the room. It's brilliant.
Totally.
Thank you for listening, guys. Join us next week for episode 121.
See you soon.
Bye. We'll